back to the Starting Lineup podcast. It is your host, Shep Jones. Across the table is Mitch George. I'm not going to mess up the intro like I did podcasts.
Like you normally do.
I'm so eager to just jump right on in.
The standard for you has just gotten so much lower that it's impossible for you to underachieve at this point.
Someone's got to hold me up, and you know that's you across the table, our statistician, yeah. Our stat man. As we covered in the last show, you're a stat guy, I'm a story guy. We have a big story tonight, 7:08 Central Time on TBS. Game 5, NLDS, the Chicago Cubs traveling to the Washington Nationals for a bid into the National League Championship Series. It would be Kyle Hendricks pitching for the Cubs and Gio Gonzalez going for the Nationals. And I was looking at some stats of role reversal here. The Washington batters against Kyle Hendricks, and that being the core, Daniel Murphy, Anthony Rendon, Jason Wirth, Matt Wieters, and Ryan Zimmerman have an average of .231 or less. The only one over that number consistently is Bryce Harper hitting .308. Jason Wirth, Matt Wieters, and Ryan Zimmerman all have goose eggs in their batting average against Kyle Hendricks.
Have the Nationals named a starter yet?
Gio Gonzalez. Yeah.
I don't know. The Cubs are pretty right-handed heavy, aren't they, as far as batters go?
No.
I'm trying. Rizzo's lefty, but...
Hayward's left. Zobe's switch.
Yeah, Bryant, who's a righty.
Bryant's a righty.
Javier Baez is a righty. Addison Russell's a righty.
Righty. Correct. Wilson Contreras, righty. Ian Happ is a switch hitter. John Jay, I think, is lefty.
Yeah, I believe he's lefty as well.
But John Jay off of Gio Gonzalez, and we were talking about how the Cubs could construct their defensive alignment. John Jay against Gio Gonzalez is a batting average of .364 and 11 at-bats against him. That's pretty good. That, to me, presents a pretty good story, you know, pretty good situation to give him the start in center field against Gio Gonzalez, even though it's a lefty-lefty matchup, and probably John Jay would be the leadoff hitter. Like all the other games, I think it's going to be a pitcher's duel. That's what we've seen thus far out of this series. You had the 5 runs scored yesterday by the Nationals, and 4 of them coming off a grand slam. But game 1, 3-0 Cubs. Game 2, 6-3 Nationals, and that was a bullpen blowout by the Cubs. Game 3, 2-1 Cubs. Game 4 yesterday was 5-0 Nationals. So the offense is there for teams, but it's not very consistent. They're low hit totals. Errors are happening. You had Anthony Rendon make an error at third in game 1, which then allowed the Cubs to get the first run on the board. You had Addison Russell make an error yesterday at shortstop.
There's been a lot of errors this postseason. Mm-hmm. It feels like. Was it the Yankees that had trouble with errors yesterday?
Even in games 1 and 2 for the Yankees, they had some error issues. Even Cleveland as well. They had some stack up, but I think the best defensive team right now would be the Astros, who have made it into the ALCS, and they will be playing the aforementioned Yankees, who toppled the Cleveland Indians in 5 yesterday, beating them 5-2. Is it more surprising that the Yankees beat Cleveland or Cleveland blew a 2-0 lead in the series?
Well.
Like how I posed that question?
Yeah, I mean, we won't get in so much to the teams blowing series leads, whether that be 2-0, 3-1. 2-game deficit, we'll say.
Right.
Down by 2 games. It was kind of a funny trend, but mm-hmm. I don't know. I would say that it's more surprising that the Cleveland lost more so than the Yankees won. I mean, because as long as the Yankees pitching staff does, because at this point, I'm not too impressed with the Yankees starting pitching because mm-hmm. Severino has been shaky in the playoffs, and then CC Sabathia was pretty good, but. Yeah, Severino's coming back, but I don't think they had the level of sustained pitching success that the Indians had. I mean, mm-hmm. they obviously didn't. So it was really surprising to me how that series went in that regard, I guess.
Well, I'm kind of looking across the board, and I think especially for this series more than any other divisional series that had happened over the last week, you had several pitchers not, like, they didn't – go past four innings pitched. You had Sonny Gray in game one go 3 1/3. Game two, you had starters exit really early. Sabathia, he went 5 1/3, but Corey Kluber, who's, you know, that ace of that staff, went 2 2/3.
That was really surprising.
Right, and I think the most consistent game out of pitchers was game three, and that was the 1-0 victory for the Yankees, so that kind of turned it around. Carrasco, 5 2/3. Tanaka went a full 7. But then Yankees jumped on him again, and Trevor Bauer, 1 2/3. So that, to me, it seems like even though the Yankees pitching staff has been shaky almost all year long, but somehow they made it into the playoffs, into the wild card game, and beat the Twins, and that was with Severino only getting one out in the entire game. The Cleveland Indians pitching staff looked like the worst staff.
Yeah.
But on paper, in the regular season, that's probably one of the best pitching staffs in Major League Baseball throughout the year.
Absolutely. I mean, even in, like, the past decade. I mean, like, and it's kind of funny because if you compare the best pitching staffs that have been assembled, like, mm-hmm. this century, mm-hmm. it's the Cleveland Indians, as far as stats go. I mean, they don't have the name recognition as the team I'm about to mention, but you're joining the likes of the 2009 Phillies,
mm-hmm.
even though I think the Indians are still a couple tiers below that level, but in 2009, the Phillies had Roy Halladay, Cliff Lee, Roy Oswalt, Joe Blanton, and Cole Hamels, all in the same pitching staff. And that's when Joe Blanton was still a good pitcher before
right.
he went to the bullpen.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, Mike Clevinger has been one of the surprises, I think, for the Indians this year, or was, I guess, now for the Indians since they're now eliminated. But so maybe we shouldn't spend too much time talking about them if they're out of the water. Maybe we should start spending some time talking about the Yankees and how they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's when the Yankees, I'll state the obvious again, their bullpen's incredible.
Right.
Because you obviously have your staple two or three of Dellin Betances and Aroldis Chapman. But then David Robertson, the acquisition of David Robertson, has been really underrated because he pitched, what, 6 innings of scoreless baseball in this,
mm-hmm.
in one of the games in the series. And Tommy Kahnle, who they also got in that same trade, has been doing a remarkable job. And they got Todd Frazier along with that, a good veteran third baseman that contributes to clubhouse value.
Mm-hmm. And you bring up some of the best pitching staffs, and my brain automatically goes to the 99 Braves when you had Tom Glavine, Greg Maddux, and John Smoltz all in the same rotation. In my mind, that's a better rotation, even though it's only 3 deep for the most part for that core. That's a better rotation than what the Cleveland Indians have. Trevor Bauer's a little shaky every once in a while. Mike Clevinger's still really young for a starting pitcher.
To clarify, I said this century.
I understand you said this century. 99's damn close. and that was that stretch for Atlanta where they were continuously was making the playoffs, but winning the World Series only once out of that stretch. I mean, from 91 to 94, they were never under 90 wins. 94, I think that was a short season. That was 68-46. That was, I think, a strike season.
Mm-hmm.
And then got right back on the horse, and from 95 to 2000, still not under 90 wins. And that was mainly due to pitching shutting down offenses, and you had Chipper Jones. Was Andrew Jones there too towards the beginning of his career?
I think so.
Yeah. That to me is one of the best pitching staff cores.
Sure.
Because you have 3 Hall of Famers right there, 1, 2, 3.
Going back to the Cubs and Nationals game tonight, depending on how Kyle Hendricks does, like you said, he's been pretty solid this postseason. This postseason he's started 1 game and he's pitched 7 innings. And in those 7 innings he did not allow an earned run, but he walked 3
mm-hmm.
And hit 1 guy. And that's his cohort, Gio Gonzalez, is also pitched in 1 game this postseason. But he only went 5 innings and allowed 3 earned runs on 2 home runs.
Mm-hmm.
So if if Hendricks does slightly worse than his first game, it's we're going to see another bullpen game like we've been seeing so often this postseason.
And I think that you could see Jose Quintana out of the bullpen, but that wouldn't necessarily be ideal. Mm-hmm. If you're going to bring him out of the bullpen, then who becomes – if the Cubs bring Quintana out of the bullpen, who then becomes the game one starter if they win?
When does that series start?
That would probably be Sunday or Monday.
John Lester?
Yeah, I think John Lester would have enough rest. And he only threw three and a third yesterday.
And he picked someone off.
I know.
He should have picked someone off at least.
The first – pickoff throw, I was satisfied by because he made it to the base on one hop. He didn't overthrow it. He didn't go in the dugout. I was like, you know what? I'm okay with that. And then picked him off. It was like, even better.
Did they call him out?
And they called him safe at the bag, and then they reviewed it, and then he got him out. He was kind of amped. They had an ISO shot on him. He was like, yeah.
I saw a tweet that said there's officially nothing John Lester can't do now.
You could also see John Lackey come out of the bullpen as well. And I was watching the game yesterday. Brian Dunsing has probably former Oriole. Brian Dunsing has probably thrown more pitches than any other reliever, just because of him warming up almost every game in the DS.
Whether or not he gets in.
He's always like. I don't know. I mean, I thought that the issue that I've always seen with Carl Edwards is that when he has his control, he's a really good pitcher. But when he doesn't, he walks
up home runs to Bryce Harper.
He gives up home runs. He walks people because he's not in the zone, or he pipes it right down the middle, and hits are. Accumulated.
What's his max velocity, about 97, 98?
Yeah, 96, 97, just about. I wouldn't be surprised if the Cubs don't use him tonight. I think they would probably go towards Pedro Strop, maybe even John Lackey, because he's got the stuff to be a really good asset out of the bullpen for the Cubs. But I would feel like both the Cubs and the Nationals are going to go all out for this. So you could see Max Scherzer come out of the bullpen. Tanner Roark would be another pitcher to come out of the bullpen for the Nationals as well.
Sure.
So, because we have game five, and we alluded to it earlier, we have one half of the championship series ready to go.
We do.
And that would be the Houston Astros and the New York Yankees. Astros now hold home field advantage. Throughout the remainder of this series. I don't think pitchers have been announced yet but they have been for the Astros and will be Dallas Keuchel. Mm-hmm.
I think they announced their first two. I think Verlander's going to go number two.
Let's check here.
I'm sure.
Game two.
I'm 100% positive.
It is Justin Verlander.
That's right.
So for the Yankees, you would probably pitch Tanaka since he would be next up.
That makes sense.
And then, who's the four? Sonny Gray. Oh, so you could do Sonny Gray game one or game two. Either way, I think those are the first two pitchers the Yankees put out there. And then you go back to Severino and then Sabathia.
Do you want to go back to Severino?
Well, with his last start, it looked pretty good. He looked like regular season Severino. I don't think the Yankees have much of a choice, though.
No, they don't.
I think they'll definitely have a quick pull on him if he's starting to get a little wild and not staying inside the zone. But Astros just look like the team to beat right now.
They do.
Astros and really the Dodgers, too. Dodgers handled the Diamondbacks pretty easily. It will be interesting to see if the Cubs do end up beating Washington and then going to play L.A., which the Cubs beat out the Dodgers last year to make it to the World Series. My inclination as a fan wants to say that the Cubs will beat the Dodgers if they make it there and move on, but my inclination as someone who enjoys sports and knows it, Dodgers could wipe the floor with the Cubs.
Yeah. here's something that's also notable. I'm looking at Dallas Keuchel against the New York Yankees here. In their careers, Greg Bird is 0 for 1. Starlin Castro is 2 for 14. Jacoby Ellsbury is 2 for 16. Brett Gardner is 0 for. Gregorius is 2 for 10. Headley is 6 for 22. Aaron Hicks is 2 for 11. Matt Holliday is 1 for 7. And Judge and Sanchez are combined 0 for 6. Mm-hmm. And Austin Romine is the only one that is above 273.
Dang.
And he's at 667. So they've had some rough patches here against Dallas Keuchel. Mm-hmm. So I, based on that alone, if Dallas Keuchel can give them six innings, I think their Astros take game one.
Yeah, and I even think if Verlander gives the Astros six innings, Astros could take game two. I wouldn't be surprised if the Astros swept it, but seeing how the Yankees came back from two down against the Indians, they could pull a game or two out. But I got to give the edge to Houston by far. The bench is a lot deeper. The pitching is a lot better. The hitting is a lot better. And
the only thing that you could argue is bullpen, but, I mean, the Astros didn't have a slouch of a bullpen whatsoever.
Right.
Chris Devinsky and company.
Ken Giles is still there, too.
100 Miles Giles.
Mm-hmm. Who was coming out of that trade from Philly looked like a bust.
Yeah.
And
not
now
anymore.
He's got his groove back. But I'll take Houston in five for that series.
I'll take him in four.
You think a sweep's about to happen there?
Well.
This is a best of seven now.
Yeah. Five or six. Let's go 5.5.
Five and a half. Half a game is going to get played for game six.
It's going to rain out.
Weather has been a problem for a lot of these games thus far.
Was it two nights? It was two nights ago.
Two nights ago it got canceled.
Yeah.
Well, game four for in Boston. That was some crap weather, too.
Yeah.
But when we have, we'll be back Monday for.
Hopefully.
By that
No, it's fall break, dude.
Oh, that's right. We won't have a show until Thursday next week, so there's going to be a lot missing out of it.
Yeah.
Who knows? I may just do my own little show.
I might have a World Series matchup by then, probably.
Potentially, not. Yeah. Well, it's a possibility.
Is it?
I believe
so. With the schedule, how the schedule lines up?
Yeah.
We'll have one of them. I don't think we'll have both of them. That's assuming a sweep happens. Mm-hmm. Really?
If both teams sweep, being the Dodgers and whoever they face, and the Astros and the Yankees, we will have a World Series set up by the end of October 18th. So the next day would be
podcast day. Wow.
Yeah.
This is moving too fast. I'm not ready for baseball to be done yet.
Baseball season's almost over.
Say both teams sweep. They don't move up the World Series, right? The World Series starts when it starts, I believe.
I don't know about that.
I'm pretty sure that it's a set group
of days. It currently says Tuesday, October 24th.
Yeah, so if they sweep, they just get like 3 days off or mm-hmm. 4 days off or whatever it is.
Right.
I feel like I haven't seen the Dodgers playing forever.
I know. They've had plenty of time to rest up, which could be an issue for whoever they face. With the final 12 minutes of the show, we will do a little football. We haven't done a pick'em in a while, so we're going to do it.
Let's do it.
Thursday night football, 7:25 Central Time. The Philadelphia Eagles travel to Carolina, in which could be an offensive shootout.
It could be.
Carson Wentz looks really good thus far through 5 weeks of this season.
I agree. I'm trying to see, because Cam Newton lit it up last week.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm inclined to take Cam Newton. So I think I'm going to go with the Panthers tonight, and I think it's going to be something like, I'll go 31-23.
In favor of Panthers?
Yeah.
I'm going to go with the Eagles. Carson Wentz this year is 110 on a 177 in completion, which is a 62% completion, is already over 1,300 yards passing, has 10 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. That to me is someone who's putting up numbers this early to be a Pro Bowl quarterback. Cam Newton on the other side started off real slow.
He was shaky, but last week gave me confidence.
Right, last week kind of even after the whole reporter thing that came out of Carolina with all that, he looked pretty good. They're starting to, the Panthers' offense is starting to use Christian McCaffrey more in their passing game, and even creating plays to get him involved by, you know, making sure that he's that top target that they use. But I'm going to go Philly 35-28.
Wow. I think Carson Wentz puts on a show.
Mm-hmm. I think Carson Wentz is going to light it up. And he's got some pretty good receivers. Nelson Aguilar doesn't get a whole lot of love. But, man, did he juke that Arizona Cardinal defender out of his shoes last Sunday.
He did.
There's still Alshon Jeffrey, Zach Ertz, LeGarrette Blount. There's no Darren Sproles. But Corey Clement and Wendell Smallwood actually look like pretty good passing down backs to kind of fill that void.
I have a proposition. I think from this week on, I think we should designate a nap game of the week. We'll get there when we get there. We'll go like chronologically. Mm-hmm. But when we get to the nap games, we should designate a nap game of the week.
Like a game that if occurred and we slept through it, we wouldn't be missing anything. Or a game that is on that we can sleep through because it's that boring.
Yeah, let's make it that. And then those games are the games that start in the 3 o'clock hour, mm-hmm. Central time.
Okay.
So,
Noon slate games.
The Bears play the Ravens. That's going to be an interesting game.
It is going to be an interesting game. I think that could be a Bear win.
Because Trubisky's going to tear up that defense.
I don't think he's going to tear up that defense. I think they're going to open the playbook a little more. And he had a pretty good showing Monday night against the Vikings.
It was
definitely a refined playbook for Trubisky, yeah. Just to kind of get him rolling and get him used to, you know, going up against top, you know, your first string defenses for opponents. And because when he did play in the preseason, he was playing second string, third string defenses, and that's not too hard to kind of tear up.
And as I remember, I don't remember him making too many poor throws,
except for the interception.
Except for the Harrison Smith interception. Mm-hmm. He threw one ball at the dirt, I think, but that was about it. Otherwise, yeah. He had a pretty good completion percentage.
A lot of pocket rollouts, which is the 2-point conversion play.
Yeah.
That was nifty.
That was real nifty.
That was kind of interesting to watch see happen and kind of unfold, because I was like, what the hell's happened? It was like a reverse and a pitch and another pitch. I was like, okay, this is weird, but hey, 2 points on the board.
That's right.
Miami at Atlanta. Atlanta's going to mop Miami with a floor. Atlanta's going to tear the defense up, and the defense is going to essentially dig a hole for Jay Cutler's body.
What's the Falcons' wide receiver situation in this game?
Because
I know
Julio Jones practiced today.
Okay, that's good. And then I know Sanu is questionable, so maybe we'll see Sanu again. But yeah. If Julio Jones practicing, I don't doubt that he'll be a factor in that game. So they should avoid upset alert this week.
Yeah, NFC North matchup.
It's a good one.
Green Bay Packers at your Minnesota Vikings.
I don't know how that's gonna go, but
I gotta give it to Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay.
They say that Teddy Bridgewater will be active for this game.
Really?
By the way, Week 6.
Really?
Is he going to be active?
Okay, he may be active. Is he going to start?
Probably not.
I would assume not.
But, I mean, like, at the same time, why would you activate someone early and just have them there? I guess so he can just be the second string quarterback?
Unless they're trying to bluff Green Bay, which won't work. Mike McCarthy is smart enough to know that he had a pretty serious knee injury. Mm-hmm. And if they activate him early, they're probably not going to play him. I got to think that Case Keenum's going to start. Because Sam Bradford looked really bad Monday night.
He had another week to heal, so we'll see how he feels. But it could be just another one of those injury years for Sam Bradford,
mm-hmm.
which is funny, because I know I said this on the podcast before, but Mike Zimmer, at the week after it initially happened, he said, yeah, Sam will be fine. It'll be somewhere between 1 week, but it could be up to 6 weeks. And mm-hmm. I'm just like, well, thanks, coach.
We have Detroit at New Orleans. That's going to be an offensive shootout.
Give me the Saints.
Give me Detroit. I think Detroit's defense.
Do we ever agree on anything?
We're going to agree on this next game, but I think Detroit's defense is just a little bit better than New Orleans.
We didn't do picks for Packers-Vikings.
Oh, I'm going to take Packers.
I'm going to take the Vikings just to be a homer, and we're going to go 20-17 Vikings. Same score as the Bears.
I don't think Aaron Rodgers could put up a 40 bag, but I think I think it could get real close.
I know that the Vikings don't have a good offense, but their defense is top five.
I understand
that,
but
say that they're going to put up more than 30 points. I'll bet you that quarter.
I'll go right at 30.
How many Vikings are going to score?
21. It's a respectable number.
Whatever. I'll shrug it off.
Detroit, I'm going 28-24.
I'm going to go Saints 38 and Lions 31.
All right.
It's going
to
be a good one.
We're going to agree on this one. New England travels to the New York Jets. I'm going to take New England.
One of those classic Rex Ryan, Bill Belichick games.
Not anymore. I'm definitely for taking New England, and I think New England could put up a 40 bag.
Oh, yeah. That's,
for sure.
That's definitely.
I would even say 45 is possible.
Have 25 up by half.
Mm-hmm.
And looks like the Patriots are going to have Rob Gronkowski back for this game, too. So that'll even add to the cause.
Right. I'll go New England 45, Jets 14.
I'll give them 10.
Cool.
Give
them 10. San Fran at Washington.
At Washington. I think Kirk Cousins tears them apart. That would sound like John Gruden a little bit.
35-17, Washington.
35-17. We'll go 31-24. Something like that.
Bears at Ravens. I'm going to go 17-14 Ravens on a Justin Tucker game expiring field goal. Per usual for the Baltimore Ravens.
Justin Tucker's their MVP.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is strange. You're going to be taking the Ravens, but I'm going to take the Bears.
Oh.
I'm going to take the Bears.
Get some, get a little hope there in Trubisky for the Bears.
I think Trubisky will lock her down. I think we might be able to see him go over 300 yards for the first time in his career.
Really?
That's what I'm thinking.
I think it's a little generous. I think maybe 250. But Trubisky does get his guy Tanner Gentry off of the practice squad. During the preseason, the two of them were hooking up almost on every other play, on a pass play. Tanner Gentry's, from what I saw in the preseason, a pretty good wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
And Trubisky was looking his way. I don't think Gentry will get a lot of snaps, but with the Bears waving Deontay Thompson, that does make room for him to maybe get on the field and try some things out.
Sure.
Cleveland at Houston.
Houston. Deshaun Watson's going to tear it up.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of how much he's going to tear it up because he's put up 50 before. Miles Garrett's back.
Nah.
I'm going to put Houston 30.
I'm taking 31, so you can take 31.
38, and I'll give the Browns 10.
31-21.
Oh, got some hope for the Browns there?
Yeah, a little hope for the Browns.
Oh, no, I did forget that Whitney Mercilus and J.J. Watt are out. I'll give him an extra touchdown. I'll go 17.
Yeah.
The beginning of our potential nap games.
Nap games of the week.
Tampa Bay at Arizona.
So ones you don't mind missing?
I actually wouldn't mind missing Tampa Bay at Arizona.
Yeah, it's definitely between that Bucks. It's definitely that game for me.
Yeah.
Because I want to see Jared Goff rip apart the Jaguars. Mm-hmm. And the Steelers and Chiefs, I want to see the Chiefs offense.
Yeah.
I want to see Kareem Hunt run for 400 yards.
Right.
And I want to see Derek Carr turn it around.
Is he going to play?
Maybe.
I haven't heard much about that. If he plays, Oakland. If he doesn't, Chargers. That's what I'm going to go with.
Yeah.
I'm also going to take Kansas City. And I will take Jacksonville.
Derek Carr's back.
All right.
He's going to play.
So I'm going to take Oakland. But I'm going to take Jacksonville against the Rams.
No.
Yes.
No way.
Yes. Yeah. Watch it happen.
The Rams are a whole new team.
And
whole new team.
Our two final games, New York at Denver. Denver by a lot. And
that'll be a fun one for Sunday night there.
See, my personal nap game is the Monday night game.
Yep, that's exactly what
If Marcus Mariota doesn't start, it's a total snooze
this
game.
This is the toilet bowl game of the week.
Yes.
Not the nap game of the week.
It's a toilet bowl game if Marcus Mariota does not start.
True.
But that will do it for today. We will be back in a week.
Long time.
Yeah, we get fall break here at school, so we get some relaxation time to kind of get our brains right for midterms and then the final stretch for the semester and finals. So we will be back in a week. We'll be sure to hit it on Twitter throughout the next 7 days. Keep everyone updated. We'll be back in a week.
See ya.